And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back from the sports abyss, the college football abyss, really. We got Big Ten Media Days here yesterday, fall camp opening next week. Luke and I looked at each other from the numerous Twitter machine messages we've gotten from the numerous people on Gopher Illustrated yearning for some Gopher football talk. So here we are. Luke, Big Ten Media Days yesterday. I don't think we've recorded here in about 3 months. How's life?
It's good. I was surprised to see the Big Ten Media Day came around. That really actually caught me off guard. I didn't see it coming. And all of a sudden, the social media sphere was just full of Big Ten media stuff. And all of a sudden, I'm like, wow, is football really around the corner? And apparently that's the case.
So for those who don't know that, I mean, Luke and I do talk outside of this podcast. So, I mean, Luke, it's been 3 months since the people have heard from you. I mean, is there anything you want to tell them about what's been going on in your life or what? I know people get invested in us.
No, I really have nothing interesting. Not at all. I'm excited to see that the Minnesota United are doing well. They're on a 3-game win streak. I have to be honest about that. I do enjoy soccer, as you're well aware. So that has been fun.
Yeah.
But this is not a United podcast. So what about yourself? Any quick updates? I mean, life updates before we get into the football season.
Man, I feel like I've been traveling far too much. I did go to Ireland. I think we talked about that on our last podcast. I was in London for 2 days with my family and my better half. There is no ring on her finger. I know that there are some people that are very upset about that. We have – me and my better half have been together now – oh, man. I'm getting old. 5 years.
Wow.
I mean, we moved into northeast Minneapolis from north Minneapolis, so that's something. If you ever have a chance to go to Ireland, Luke, you have to do it. It was insanely, insanely beautiful. Just so many different landscapes. The people there are terrific. I also got to go to London for 2 days. That was an interesting experience. Being on the tube. Luke, have you ever been to London?
Yeah, I've been to London. We talked about this. You were asking for suggestions.
I remember that. Yeah, that's a crazy town, especially when you're there the week before the royal wedding. There are a lot of very anxious and nervous Brits there, and prices aren't too great. But let's see. Hunting and fishing wise, I did get up to Lake of the Woods, and that is still my favorite lake, I think, on this planet in terms of I'm a huge walleye guy, and we had no issue catching our 6-man limit for our boat. And again, we're not even going out with a guide. So if you can find the fish, it's pretty easy. And I guess the last thing is there's a black bear running around, where I hunt in Washington County. And I got pictures of it like 40 yards from houses and like right next to my tree stand. So, I literally just looked down and my landowner texted me. He's like, "Hey, I'm washing the dishes and there's a black bear that just ran across the road." I go, "Okay, good. Yeah, I can't wait to go in at 4:30 in the morning and hear things crashing close to me and be like, oh, I wonder if that's a black bear or if that's a raccoon. Because one outcome is very good for me. One outcome hopefully isn't between me and a couple of cubs. So,
yeah,
it's a little interesting right now. But let's talk a little bit of Gopher football, I suppose, now, considering PJ Flex talked. And we should probably get into some different things here. But before we do that, I do want to get Luke's opinion. Luke is an elite University of Minnesota mind.
I am not even close to an elite University of Minnesota mind, but okay, I'm interested to see where this is coming from.
So Luke is an elite University of Minnesota mind, especially on the basketball side of things, revenue sports side of things. And news came out, I think it was last week, 2 weeks ago, that Eric Kaler, the University of Minnesota president, is going to be stepping down about a year from now. I believe July 1st was when he said he's stepping down. And so, there have been some definite ups and downs with Eric Kaler as the University of Minnesota athletic president and athletics. I think on the academic side of things, Luke, you would probably know more in depth than I would on that subject. So, the first thing I want to ask you is, what do you think about it? I mean, should on the academic side of things, how do you think things went, especially and then on the athletic side of things? how do you think things went?
Well, I mean, this is actually, we could probably dedicate almost like an entire podcast to this, because I would be interested in talking about this in more depth. But I mean, the gist of it is, and I think this was covered on your website and Gopher Illustrated in some of the threads, the discussion board threads. I mean, Eric Kaler was a friend to Revenue Athletics, right? Like, I don't think anybody can deny that, in terms of he definitely put a priority into making improvements there, whether that was investment or whatever. And it was probably, you know, they were definitely playing catch up. So you could argue, like, hey, you know, they've been trying to catch up in the facility arms race for a while, and this was inevitable regardless of who this was. But I guess from my perspective, he was friendly to Revenue Athletics. Now, that said, he kind of, I would argue he's kind of been hit or miss in terms of hiring. Norwood Teague looked like a home run hire, ended up being a terrible hire. Mark Coyle to me seems like a good hire. It's hard to tell, but there's definitely been, and don't get me wrong, the University of Minnesota is not alone in this. When it comes to bad PR with an athletic department, during his tenure, there was no shortage of bad PR. Specifically, I think we all could reference multiple different issues, whether it was, you know, going back to the Royce White situation, you know, Trevor Mbakwe situation. We could even go, obviously, we can go back to the Tracy Clays situation. You know, there's no shortage of that. And I think that, you know, repeatedly, I think he probably deserves some fault in that, being the top guy. But I mean, ultimately, there is some good and there is some bad. So I could see where people are on either side of the argument, where they really liked him or they really hated him. I don't know, Ryan, from an athletic standpoint, what did you think? Did you think it was good or bad? I mean, I know you don't pay too much attention to like the other sports other than football. I give you a hard time about that all the time. But I mean, I thought, at least from the Revenue sports standpoint, they've made the commitments necessary.
Yes. And again, you look at the kind of two athletic director in recent memory, Norwood Teague, an absolute dumpster fire, which the scandal there in itself. And then with Mark Coyle, you know, with Mark Coyle, I think he's made great hires in terms of with PJ Fleck. He was very quick on the spot there. I mean, even Lindsay Whalen closing on her, you know, there's momentum behind that program like we haven't seen since Lindsay was actually in her playing days. So it, for me, with Mark Coyle, and you look at Eric Kaler, that whole relationship, you know, the behind the scenes, it, you know, the rumor, you know, where when Mark Coyle got the power to do what he wanted to do from Eric Kaler, that's when that afternoon, I think it was a Tuesday afternoon, when Eric Kaler allegedly, you know, looked around the room and was like, all right, let's support Mark and what he wants to do. The first thing out of Mark's mouth is, hey, Tracy's out, let's go see if we can get PJ Fleck. So again, when Mark Coyle has had the power to do so, I think he's been pretty good. And again, we'll see what happens on the basketball side of things. And you would know better than I about what Richard Pitino's hot seat looks like. In my opinion, he's got to win some games this fall, or else things are looking a little bit toasty for him. But on the football side of things, again, they just got that brand new $180 million facility done. It looks fantastic. An absolute huge selling point for the recruiting side of things. Just an upgrade from day-to-day operation side of things for the players, the staff, the support staff, the nutritionists, the athletic trainers. They have all brand new things to work with, and that just kind of goes beneficial long-term. So again, I think it's good, you know, for what Eric Kaler and Mark Coyle have done in recent memory. But I guess the big thing here before we start talking a little bit about Gopher offense in 17 and 18 is how important it is. And again, I know you sent me Chip Scroggins from the Star Tribune's column about this, that whoever the next University of Minnesota president is, my God, you have to hope that they support Revenue Athletics, don't you?
Well, yeah. And, you know, I guess I didn't really answer your other question too, but, you know, as a university president, you're the head of the university, right? And under the university's, you know, discretion or control is an athletics department, which is completely isolated and alone and separate from itself, but you also have this you have this academic side, right? I would have to say, at least from the outside, you know, I went to the University of Minnesota as an engineering student. I have benefited greatly since he came because the engineering schools have seemingly climbed the ladder in terms of academic ranking. The quality of student that they're getting is better and better each year, it seems like. I mean, they're very competitive with a lot of the, you know, the bigger big name schools in the Big Ten for engineering now. So I have to imagine on the academic side, it seems like things have definitely, you know, made an improvement. But you know, like we were getting into, this is a two-sided coin for a university president. You have the academic side you have to handle, but you also have the athletic side that you oversee as well. And you have to make a commitment to that as well. And we both know the value of athletics, you know, driving academic, improvement, right? Like there's no question, there's lots of data. I can't cite it all off the top of my head now, but there's lots of data that proves, like, you go to a Rose Bowl, you'll see enrollment or applicants, you know, higher, right? Like
anywhere you go, especially right. Which has been the trend the last, I don't know if it's been going on longer than 10-20 years, but like when Butler went to their Final Four run,
or VCU, right? Like both of them.
The next year, you see an absolute spike in applications into that university because kids want to be a part of a great revenue producing, you know, sport. They want to be a part of that fan base. Everybody wants to see winning, and especially in the sports abyss that is Minnesota sports, where the Twins are absolutely mediocre. The Vikings are basically the only chance of the pro four, you know, the four pro sports teams with everything that's going on with Jimmy Buckets and Cat. And your guy Thibodeau, Luke, and the Wild's perennial one and done. I mean, again, if this is a Minnesota sports market as a whole, that if Richard Pitino or PJ Fleck are able to get, you know, if Richard Pitino is able to get to the Sweet 16 a couple years in a row, you're going to see a bump. If PJ Fleck's able to win 8, 9, 10 games in 2019 or 2020, again, kids want to be a part of that. But for that to happen, you have to have a president that's still supporting those revenues for producing teams even before you see that increase.
Well, let's not forget too that for a large part, you know, nationally, some people are just like the University of Minnesota or VCU or Butler, which we've mentioned, aren't top of minds for a lot of students. So just the fact that you get them in the Final Four or any of these big athletic events, you know, they're just seeing that name across the screen and maybe now consider that. We consider that school as an option for them where they maybe never would have before, right? That's the other bonus of just being there. Whether or not they want to be a part of a winner, they're just aware of that school in general. The other thing that I think we should highlight, like you know, Mark Coyle did hire a new hockey coach as well, right? And that's been I don't know anything about hockey. Like, I know that you try to put the puck in the net, but like, other than that, I mean, seemingly everything I've read either on GopherIllustrated.com or other, you know, other publications has been that was a good hire as well, which seems to be in Coyle's, you know, a benefit for Coyle as well in terms of his perception ongoing.
I'm going to defer all Gopher hockey questions to Eric Vigo of The Athletic. And Eric, I hope I'm pronouncing your last name correctly. He does a fantastic job. This is not any paid athletic sponsorship. Eric is an avid member of Gopher Illustrated. He does a terrific job for The Athletic. Sure. He does a terrific job breaking down things on Gopher Illustrated about Gopher hockey, about, you know, these recruits coming in, the brand new head coach. What does it mean? How does everything going to play out? So, again, Eric, I don't know if you're going to be listening to this or not, but even if you aren't, I think he does a fantastic job. So, again, it's going to be vital. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, and you have to have all those revenue sports, like, you know, being a positive impact, right? I'm not necessarily a huge proponent of trickle-down economics, but this is the one instance where I can definitely believe that, you know, if especially football, but if other revenue sports can be successful in driving a lot of revenue, that's going to benefit everybody in the end, right? That's the one instance where I probably would subscribe to trickle-down economics. But
absolutely.
Okay, so I think we probably talked this subject a little bit today, one, because it's big news and it impacts, you know, the greater state of football in general. But we also can talk about it because we don't know a lot about offense. largely because we have historically spent a ton of time talking about quarterback, for instance, and we literally just don't know anything because neither one of these quarterbacks that are on roster that are slated.
I'd like to think if anyone on this planet knows something about what's going to happen with Gopher football quarterbacks, I would be among about two or three other people in the media, maybe just one other person.
Yeah, but we've seen one spring game, and then, you know, then there's the, like, the whole sources angle. Like, what can we really expect out of these guys? Like, that's a realistic expectation for these quarterbacks.
And that's the question of the day.
I know.
I mean, what's realistic for two guys that are two freshmen that have yet to throw a Division I pass or a collegiate pass
and I get
in
that,
any sort of a game?
Like, don't get me wrong. I get that Zach Anikstad is technically a redshirt. He's going to be on scholarship, I got to imagine, at some point in the future. But, like, you're literally looking at a redshirt freshman and a walk-on. Sorry, I meant to say Anikstad is a walk-on. Like, that's correct. Literally your options right now.
Let's look at the bar. I mean, for all this data I'm about to cite over the next 30, 45 minutes, I've already done all the research, folks. I mean, for UGI members, you can just feel free to pull up your Burns analysis pieces on Gopher Illustrated. I mean, luckily for me and for my parent company of CBS Sports, we have exclusive access to Pro Football Focus grades. And I know that there's a lot of debate about Pro Football Focus, and I don't believe it's the end all for everything that this is the holy grail, but I also know that Pro Football Focus is actually pretty damn good at what they do. And again, between Pro Football Focus and then using SB Nation's Football Study Hall, which is, you know, Pro Football Focus angle side of things is the individual player, whereas the Football Study Hall, and again, for those of you who want to see what that is, go to footballstudyhall.com and then just kind of type in Minnesota. You can see how Minnesota graded out as a team. And so being able to kind of look at things on an individual perspective and then as a team perspective over the last few years and kind of projecting that and how it's going to look in 2018, I think was pretty interesting to kind of get into. Because I know when I went through each one of these positions, I had kind of a predetermined what I thought what it was going to be. And then I actually get into the stats. And it was like, some different things here and there where it was like, I didn't really expect to really think that. Well, here I am thinking it, so might as well write about it. So when you look at Minnesota, it is 20, let's go back to 2014's Pro Football Focus grades for how Minnesota did at the quarterback position. So in 2014, Mitch Leidner, God bless Mitch Leidner. And for the amount of time we have spent on this podcast talking about Mr. Leidner. But in 2014, as a sophomore, his grade was 47.2. That was the worst of all qualifying 24 Big Ten quarterbacks. So bar extremely low. In 2015, as a junior, Mitch improved his grade to 64.2, so about below average, with 70 kind of being about the normal grade. So for those of you who don't know, 70 being about the normal grade, 64.2. So Mitch is below average nationally, and he is 15 of 24 Big Ten quarterbacks, so he's below average there. And then finally in 2016, Minnesota makes the jump to 9 wins. Well, a big part of that is Mitch Leidner grading as the fifth-rated Big Ten quarterback. Can we talk about that? Mitch Leidner getting some Pro Football Focus love, 76.2 overall, the fifth-rated quarterback of 21 qualifying Big Ten quarterbacks. And then last season, our most recent data point in the Kirk Ciarrocca offense, an absolute dumpster fire. Demry Croft being with a 50.7 grade, the worst Minnesota has seen at quarterback since 2014, and then Connor Rota with a 65.9, both of them in the bottom 30% of all FBS quarterbacks. So in terms of expectations, Luke, I think the bar has been set very low, especially when you look at Minnesota's passing game overall at the quarterback position. I mean, there are some stats I'm going to get into today where it's going to be, I know it left me shaking my head and just being like, what in the world did I watch last season? Because I believe there was only one passing touchdown from the Nebraska game on. Think about that. One passing touchdown. That is absolutely abysmal. So, facts are facts, and so it is what it is. So it's wasn't great. I mean, whether you want to look at Demry Croft, who's now at Tennessee State, again, we were clamoring for him on this podcast just because how anemic the offense was with Connor Rota, because the opposing defensive front seven essentially didn't respect him in the run game, and so they could just crash down to Rodney Smith, who was hurting the offense as a whole. So once Demery took over the reins, it was very much hit or miss, and it was a lot more missing than hits. So
yeah,
it wasn't great, Luke. Well,
in hindsight, we and maybe everybody else was, you know, naive in thinking that Demery was going to be the solution.
I don't think we thought he was going to be the solution, but I thought
it'd be an improvement. I know that.
And it was in certain aspects, but when you look at, like, when you take out the Michigan State game for Croft, where he entered and was basically going against shell defense for Michigan State because they were already up by so many points, you take out the Michigan State game. Here are Demery Croft's stats in the Big Ten. In his six starts, he completed 36% of his passes with a touchdown to interception ratio of 1-6. And then he also only threw for 74.6 yards per game. Yikes. Absolutely yikes. Now, again, we'll get into that at the wide receiver position and the pass catching position overall. That position outside of Tyler Johnson was also just cringe, extremely cringy. So, again, when we kind of want to look forward to what can we expect, again, I have not at all given up faith in Kirk Shiraka as Minnesota's offensive coordinator. And, you know, PJ Fleck talked about it yesterday at Big Ten Media Days that, again, last year's offense wasn't great, but you look at what we did, and by we, PJ Fleck saying that about Western Michigan, again, their year one wasn't great at all at Western Michigan offensively, and then Kirk Shiraka ends it his final 2 years at Western Michigan with back-to-back 20-win offenses. And so when you look at kind of the differences, like, why was Minnesota so bad last year compared to what Kirk Shiraka had just 1 year previously? Well, their passing success rate, and for those, again, we're going to be using these different terms found on footballstudyhall.com. Success rate is a football outsider's tool used to measure efficiency, you know, whether every play was successful or not. You know, did they get the necessary yardage on first, second, and third down to continue the offense going? Well, at Western Michigan in 2016, Western Michigan's passing offense rated as the third most efficient offense in the country, where last year at Minnesota, it was the 118th out of 128 FBS teams. Immediately right there, it tells you that the passing game was never able to get on schedule because of bad quarterback play, and plus it wasn't getting a whole lot of help from the receiver position. I mean, would that surprise you for me to say that?
No, I mean, that's kind of what we expect and what we saw, right? Like, neither outside of Tyler Johnson and, I mean, at times Connor Rota, there wasn't a lot to be had at either position.
No. And now I understand trying to compare these two offenses maybe isn't even right, because Western Michigan's offense would have kicked Minnesota's butt, because they had Corey Davis at receiver, who's a first-round draft pick, top five overall, plus Zach Terrell in his fourth year in Kirk Shiraka's offense. So maybe it's not right to exactly compare the two, but if you're looking for how does Minnesota's offense get to where you want to be excited about Kirk Shiraka again, well, first of all, that's the biggest thing for me, is that if you want to look forward to seeing if this offense can improve, they absolutely can improve by just being more efficient. Completing some of these passes, because again, Demery Croft, the final six games of the year, completed 36% of his passes, where Zach Terrell against MAC level teams, I know comparing the MAC and Big Ten is a little bit difficult at times, but Zach Terrell essentially doubled that completion rate. Zach Terrell had 70% completion percentage in his senior year. Demery Croft in Big Ten play had 36%. So again, just completing passes just helps the entire offense as a whole. I know this is groundbreaking analysis, Luke. Completing a forward pass helps an offense. This is exactly why folks are coming to the Gopher Gridiron podcast.
Yeah, well, keep in mind, though, neither of these quarterbacks have completed a collegiate pass or actually thrown one, right?
Yes. I mean, the only data points that actually matter, I shouldn't even say that, because I have seen both of them, I think, at 9 spring practices plus the spring game. And again, what we have for data is Tanner Morgan in the spring game, 18 of 28 for 272 yards, no turnovers, 2 touchdowns to Tyler Johnson. Zach Anistead going against the first string defense, working with the second string, maybe a more impressive stat line of 11 for 18, 186, and a touchdown to Rodney Smith. Now, Tanner Morgan, the redshirt freshman who followed PJ Fleck, flipped just before he was about to enroll at Western Michigan. For me, the biggest thing that I've seen in Tanner Morgan since he's been here now 11 months the biggest thing I saw from him in fall camp last year to where he was this spring was just confidence. It was moxie and was improved arm strength. Now, how do I want to phrase this? Tanner Morgan isn't the biggest guy in the world. And I saw Bill Conley of SB Nation make this comparison. If you want to know what Tanner Morgan looks like and you haven't looked at him yet, he looks like Wayne Rooney. So for those of you who know what Wayne Rooney, and you guys are soccer nuts, I mean, he essentially looks like a 6'1" Wayne Rooney. I don't know how big Wayne Rooney is.
Not that big.
So just the way he was able to command the offense, because he has been the starter the entire spring, and that continued into the spring game. Just being consistent. And again, that's basically what I was just preaching for with efficiency in this passing game is if I know that Tanner Morgan's at least going to complete 55% of his passes, hell yeah, I'm down for that. Now, he may not be able to always, you know, say it's a deep post corner and he's not able to get the ball right over the, you know, defensive back's head. I mean, it is what it is, but at least he's going to be consistent. But in that same breath, I think what I keep coming back to here, especially recently, is I cannot sleep on Zach Anikstad, and neither should you, because all Zach Anikstad has done in the last 18 months is make some more highly touted prospects very angry. And what I mean by that is heading into Anikstad's senior year, he went to IMG Academy in Florida, essentially the top high school program for football in the country. He comes in as a kid from Mankato West as a junior. No one knows who he is, doesn't win the starting job because there's a couple of kids going to SEC schools ahead of him. Heading into his senior year, he's the backup to a higher-rated quarterback that was committed to Miami. Now, I'm not going to use this kid's name. I don't really like kind of talking bad about 16, 17, 18-year-old kids, so if you want to look it up, that's up to you. But by the end of September, just 3-4 games in, Zach Anikstad's playing practice, plus the starter ahead of him, again, committed to the University of Miami, a highly touted top 150 recruit, he's struggling. Anikstad's playing well in practice. The coaching staff goes, Anikstad, get in there in this game against, I think it was Miami Central. And from there, he never relinquished control of the job. And he goes on to start the rest of the season over this highly touted kid. Miami ends up dropping him. The kid does land on his feet. Don't worry. He ended up with Jerry Kill at Rutgers because that's where he's from, was from the state of New Jersey. But, you know, this quote from IMG coach, Kevin Wright, really stuck out to me. He says, we were struggling in the game and Zach came in. He gave us a bit of an advantage and he just never gave it up from there. He's an extremely underrated player. He will make an absolute impact for Minnesota over the next few years. So he ends up beating out the guy, the starter at IMG Academy, helps IMG Academy to a successful season. He ends up still deciding to walk on at Minnesota over scholarship offers from Pitt and Illinois. And then what does he do, Luke, once he gets here on campus? Well, from January all the way up until April, May, he ends up passing the more highly touted Victor Viramontes, the top junior college quarterback that we had rated on 24/7. He passes him, and now he's the number two on the depth chart. So while in the spring game especially, it was the big defining moment where you would have thought that Anikstad was the JUCO and that Viramontes was the true freshman walk-on. Viramontes was nervous. He was dropping snaps. And unfortunately for him, he had his worst day of spring ball that day where Anikstad seemingly thrived under pressure there, and now he's the number two on the roster. So Minnesota essentially does only have two quarterbacks on the roster here. Zach Anikstad will be on scholarship here, I would imagine, within the next 4 or 5 months. At the earliest date that Minnesota is able to put him on scholarship, he will be on scholarship. He has proven himself to that this spring. And especially with the new redshirt rule, Luke, I think both quarterbacks play.
Right.
I absolutely think. Now, I don't know in what order it's going to go. Right. I mean, we could talk about this for, 5 minutes. And how is PJ Fleck going to use freshmen now? Because for those of you who didn't catch that, the NCAA passed a new rule where you can play a player up to 4 games in a season and maintain a redshirt on. So we don't have situations like David Cobb getting 1 carry in 1 game, burning his red shirt because everybody would have wanted to have him back for an extra year. Now, it doesn't matter in what order you play up these 4 games. You can play the first 4, the middle 4, the final 4, the first 2, the final 2. It really doesn't matter. So there is no more where a Minnesota coach, for example, can hide behind, hey, this guy looks really great in practice. You know, we're unfortunately we're not winning a lot of games, but at least we're going to be able to put the redshirt on. But I really wish we could play him because he'd help the team. You can't hide behind that anymore. You can't. Because if you're struggling and you're talking up kids that aren't playing, throw them out there, sink or swim. Because that, to me, that is fascinating to see what college football does this year is what does each individual coaching staff do with this redshirt rule? Because I think folks are assuming that, you know, you're either going to play him in the first four games or the final four games. Well, behind the scenes, I mean, yes, you could do that, but it takes up to like 3 weeks to make sure these kids are ready to go, because you can't exactly go from 1 week on the scout team to where you're not learning. Essentially, if you're on the scout team, you're not learning your own playbook. You're learning the opposing team's playbook to try and give your offense or defense a good look for that upcoming Saturday. You can't go from scout team to actually trying to, you know, say it's the middle of the season and we got Nebraska next week. Well, you can't be pulling a kid off scout team and saying, hey, you got 4 days to get prepared, and then expect him to go out there and give him his best chance to succeed. It's a multi-week process. So, again, I am very interested to see what PJ Fleck does, because I think it's going to be on an individual kid basis to, again, if you're going to play these kids, how many are you just going to use on special teams? How many of them are you just going to use sporadically for a certain package and offensive defense? I think it's going to be fascinating to follow throughout Minnesota's season. But I do think both Anikstad and Tanner Morgan are going to start games.
Yeah, and you know, with this redshirt rule, you're probably not going to run into a situation where Minnesota was last year, where we were hypothesizing, hey, is Nate Wozniak going to be their emergency tackle if they're not able to?
Exactly.
Right? So I guess that gets us to, we really, really got to talk about the offensive line. Like, finally, you know, they've got some healthy bodies. They've got a little bit of depth. Like, literally, they're just not turning around going, okay, what guy can we get to play offensive line? And we saw, I think, if I remember correctly, you know, I didn't take copious notes of our previous conversations, but I think you were impressed with the improvement of the offensive line in the spring.
I was. Two things I do want to know here quick before switching to offensive line is, when you're, again, we're going to talk about it once I've seen some spring practice or some fall camp practices here in a bit, but the two things that I bet you PJ Fleck, Kirk Ciarrocca, and everybody is going to be watching this spring is, how do these two quarterbacks take care of the ball in fall camp? PJ Fleck has stressed at every practice I've been to, the ball is the program. And when you look at Minnesota's quarterback interception rate from 2017, there was an interception on every 21 pass attempts. That's awful, especially when you look at Western Michigan's Zach Terrell from 2014 to 2016, a 3-year sample size, which about is as good as you're going to get. He had an interception for every 49 throws. So while Minnesota last season was one for every 21, Terrell was one for every essentially 50. So if Anikstad and Morgan can get that even to the high 30s, we're talking about an improved offense. And then the final thing I want to touch on with either one of these quarterbacks, I think there's just a stigma in run pass option offenses that the quarterback needs to be a runner. Zach Terrell at Western Michigan is not the most athletic guy in the world, and Western Michigan's offense was very good. And the last 3 years, Zach Terrell ran the ball 78, 77, and 100 times. Like, if you average that out 12, 13 games, now, Luke, my Calc 4 days have been, I think it's only like six. It's six times a game.
Yeah, six or seven times a game.
All you have to do is keep the defense honest. That's all you have to do. You don't have to run the ball 15, 20, 30 times. So as long as they can just be respectable with their legs, I think it can be much better. So offensive line-wise, I think it's the best part of this offense. At least I think it's going to be the most steady.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at what happened last year. Like, there were some – this is a position group that, to no surprise, has struggled for the most part. Better half of a decade going back to 2006. And last year, I mean, you look at what Minnesota had on PFF. I mean, Nick Conley was Minnesota's third best offensive lineman. He almost had an 80 grade. I mean, he was very good, and then he's forced into retirement because of concussions.
Right.
Jared Weiler misses games because of various injuries. Vincent Calhoun – PFF was not very kind to him at all. He graded out as Minnesota's worst offensive lineman. But the crazy thing is, you look at, you know, what has been an abyss of talent at offensive line. Minnesota is returning two starters who had over 80 grades. That's like top 10% of offensive linemen last season. Jared Weiler, again, someone for the second straight year is now on the Remington watch list, is tied for the top spot among all Big Ten linemen in returning grades. He has an 83.9 grade, good enough for 15th best in America. He's tied with a gentleman from Wisconsin for the top returning spot in the Big Ten for PFF grades. That's pretty good. And Donnell Green has an 81.1. That's good for top 12. So to have a core to build around in your left tackle and your center, I'd argue that's your two most important positions on the offensive line. And for them to be going into their final years of eligibility, I think it's pretty good. And so I don't think Jared Weiler is someone that – I wish Derek was here so we could talk about some interior offensive lineman play. But when Jared Weiler has been healthy, because he has missed 9 games the last 2 seasons because of injury, so that's going to be a huge thing to kind of watch this year. When Jared Weiler has been healthy, he has been a very good offensive lineman. And whether you want to look at the tape, whether you want to look at what PFF says, it's just been something where he's gotten better and better. And so, especially with Minnesota trying to figure out what's going to happen on the interior of their offensive line on right or the left of Jared, I think that's important to watch. And then again, having your left tackle return and especially grade out as well as he did, again, I think Donald Green is going to end the drought. I think end the drought of getting a Minnesota lineman into the NFL. It's been 12 years. It'll be 13 next spring. I think he finally ends it. So, again, I think that, you know, while Jared Weiler, we didn't see a whole lot from him this spring as Minnesota was trying to get him healthy and then keep him healthy because, again, he's extremely vital to what Minnesota wants to do on the offensive line this fall. And especially with Donnell Green as well. Again, I think between those two, I feel pretty good about where Minnesota's at right now. And then there's some battles to be won elsewhere, Luke.
So when you look at offensive line, just out of curiosity, I mean, again, this redshirt rule intrigues me a little bit. You've got some highly touted kids. You know, do you see most, you know, especially most of these freshmen getting a chance? Because traditionally, you know, freshmen, for instance, have always been almost automatic redshirts for offensive line. I know you probably don't really know, but how would you speculate that they might use this new redshirt rule specifically for offensive line?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because you look at, you know, I feel pretty good about Connor Olson getting that left guard spot for Minnesota. And now PFF wasn't kind to him basically whatsoever, but I talked about it in my Burns analysis piece. I'll go for Illustrated that Connor Olson had a lot on his plate last season, and I can see why PFF wasn't kind to him because Connor had to start in his first as a redshirt freshman last year. Number one, he's thrown into the fire probably well before he should have been. Again, I'm not a huge proponent of throwing redshirt freshmen, or even redshirt sophomores out there because you're hoping that you have redshirt sophomores, redshirt juniors, and redshirt seniors ready to go. And again, especially in the trenches, it's a grown man's game. So throwing out a 19-year-old, number one, probably not ideal. Having him start 6 games at guard, 6 games at center, while they are right next to each other on the offensive line, that's 2 totally different responsibilities, especially at center. You're essentially calling the line in terms of the – and especially when the – when the quarterback wants to audible to something, okay, well, he tells you it's an audible. Well, then you have to tell the rest of the offensive line they're different assignments. So he just had a lot on his plate. And if Jared Weiler is able to stay healthy, he's going to be the center for Minnesota. And that allows Connor Olson now as a redshirt sophomore to really focus on things there. And then where you get into here is there's going to be some guys that I think they're going to play as true freshmen for Minnesota. You know, you look at the right guard position, Blaze Andrews, the top rated recruit in Minnesota's 2017 recruiting class, the top rated recruit from Minnesota in 2017 as well from Marshall, Minnesota, chose the Gophers over a multitude of different powerhouse teams. I know he didn't have the greatest of spring games, but what Blaze has been able to show in practice when he's confident in himself is he has a ceiling that's pretty high. And he's just a young man who's 6'6", 300 pounds. He's strong, he's athletic, and he's got great feet. To where when you watch him do something in a pulling action, it looks very fluid, it looks very athletic, and that's not something that Minnesota's always had at guard. For Blaze, it's just going to be about building confidence for him. He has to think, you know, he has to believe in himself. He's got to have some good things. He's got to have some things go his way. And I think that if he does, he's Minnesota's starting right guard right now. And then a tackle. Again, we talk about the redshirt rule. You bring it up. You know, Minnesota has a junior college kid by the name of Jason Dixon coming in. He's on campus already. I know that we've talked about on Gopher Illustrated about what his predicament is. Is he going to be eligible for this fall? And if that piqued your interest right there, I encourage you to head on over to Gopher Illustrated. We've been talking about it for many weeks. So if this is the first time you're hearing about it and you have another subscription to another website, not sure what you're doing over there, come on over to us. Hint, hint, wink, wink. But with Daniel Fa'alele and Curtis Dunlap Jr., those are the two names I'm really watching, because Curtis and Daniel both got work with the twos during spring ball. Both of them, for them, it's not about if they're physically ready. I mean, weight-wise and strength-wise, I believe they are. I mean, Daniel Fa'alele is a mountain of a man, 6'9", 375, 400 pounds. Curtis Dunlap, 6'4", 375 pounds. Again, these are kids, once they got their hands on people in practice, they weren't going anywhere. For them, it's going to be how good of shape have they gotten in 4 months? How good of shape, you know, how is their weight transformation going? Because, again, they have a lot of weight that they need to drop. But in that same respect, as they're dropping bad weight, they're adding good weight. And so while Daniel Fa'alele may have only dropped 20 pounds from 400 to 380, well, maybe he dropped 30 pounds of bad weight and ended 10, you know, and had 10 pounds of good weight. Curtis Dunlap the same way. Is he down at 340 from 375? And did he drop 40 pounds of bad weight and put on 10 pounds of good weight? So again, the biggest thing with those two in terms of what I've heard from sources is they're going to play more than likely, especially if Dixon is not eligible. You're looking at Donnell Green and Sam Schluter being your starting tackles. And really behind them, again, if something were to happen to Donnell Green, in my mind, you slide Sam Schluter over to left tackle. And then Daniel Fa'alele, welcome to the Big Ten. As a true freshman, you're starting. It's just what Daniel has at 6'9" and his footwork and his strength is just something that unlike Minnesota has seen in a long time. And that's why places like Georgia, Alabama, numerous other SEC schools wanted him so badly. I mean, he has a multitude of untapped potential. An Australian rugby player now playing Big Ten football. For them, it's just going to be, like I said once again, how does their body transformation continue to go? How quick can they get in much better shape than what they were in the spring? And can they stay healthy? And again, Luke, I think that these guys are playing in four games, and then we're thinking about what is the best thing for this team to win games. Is yeah. Curtis Dunlap at right guard, or is it Blaze Andrews? Say something happens with Jared Weiler, considering he's missed 9 games the last 2 seasons. I mean, if Connor Olsen slides over to center, do you move Blaze Andrews to left guard and then have Curtis Dunlap at right guard? Again, there's a lot of different things and a lot of different things we can speculate about, but until it happens, it's kind of pish-posh. But again, I think it's going to be a decision that is going to be forced by these two young men. Again, I think Curtis Dunlap and Daniel Fa'alele are going to be pushing for playing time this fall. I think they're going to be starters sooner rather than later. It's going to be interesting to see what Minnesota ends up doing at this position, but I do feel pretty good about it compared to what I have said in recent years, what I have seen in practice. Again, this is an offensive line unit that's going to have to continue to gel, considering that this is a, if it is Green, Olsen, Weiler, Andrews, and Schluter, they haven't played a lot of snaps together. They haven't played any together in the spring because Jared was out. Blaze dealt with some injuries. Sam dealt with some injuries. Again, this is an offensive line unit that needs to come together and find some continuity if Minnesota is going to take a step forward in 2018.
All right, let's talk a little bit of running back. I think I'd imagine that most everybody knows who's number one in the program, but also probably the number one running back, you know, not only in the University of Minnesota, but one of the better running backs in the Big Ten. That's Rodney Smith. He's going to headline this group. I mean, I imagine with Shannon Brooks going down, he's going to take a bulk of the carries this year. So I imagine that the real question is, okay, so how do you replace a Shannon Brooks, or can he get healthy enough to play in maybe 4 games at the end of the season and still take that red shirt? I mean, it'll be just interesting to see that whole running back, because as we are well aware, you can't just have one. You need at least a backup, if not even a third, for as much wear and tear as those guys take.
I forget if it was Jerry Kill or PJ Fleck who coined Mark, you need a pair and a spare.
No, that's Glenn Mason.
That was Glenn Mason.
Yeah.
Heaven forbid I forget about old Glenn Mason. Again, it's going to be interesting to see what Minnesota does, because you look going back to 2014. I thought this was crazy. I went back to 2014. That's when Pro Football Focus started doing their collegiate grades. Minnesota has had a different running back score 80 plus in the last 4 years. 4 different running backs. I mean, David Cobb in 2014. Shannon Brooks is a true freshman in 2015. Rodney Smith in 2016. And then Kobe McCrary last fall. And so, I mean, maybe if we're looking forward to, if they're going to do 5 in 5 years, who's that going to be? My guess would be a true freshman. But again, we'll see how that kind of plays out, because it has been something to where Minnesota is going to need somebody to kind of spell Rodney Smith. And don't get me wrong, Rodney Smith is going to get a ton of action. He is going to get a ton of carries. I think you're going to see him used a lot more. I shouldn't say a lot more. I think you're going to see him used markedly more in the passing game, kind of in what Alvin Kamara does for the Saints last year, where Alvin Kamara gets 5-6 targets out of the backfield a game, especially as Minnesota looks. You know, it's twofold there. Number one, it's an easier pass for two very young quarterbacks to make to the, you know, whether it's the running back on a wheel route, the, you know, the running back out in the flat, the running back on an arrow route across the middle. It's an easier pass. It's a shorter pass. They have they're comfortable in that. And two, getting Rodney Smith in space, good things happen. And Rodney Smith has the hands to do so. He's been very good in terms of catching the targets that come his way. And so I think that's going to be an area where you're going to see Rodney Smith use. I still think you're going to see him get 20-plus carries a game, but I do think, and I've been hinted at it from sources, that you're also going to see Rodney Smith see more in uptick in targets this year. And so the question is going to be, who's behind him? I mean, it's something to where – that's a good question, because I'm not the biggest Mohamed Ibrahim fan. Again, he was the guy you saw in the spring game go for over 100 yards on the ground and 19 carries. I just think, you know, he's fine for what he is. And I think he's a glorified Roderick Williams Jr. in the fact that he's a north-south runner. He's not a very big guy. There's not a whole lot of elusiveness to his game. He can make one man miss in the hole. He doesn't have great speed. I just think that if you're going to be going for a home run type of hitter, you're going to have to rely on one of these true freshmen in Nolan Edmonds and Bryce Williams. Two guys that have shown on tape, have shown at camps that they have, in theory, or at least by testing standards, are better in terms of the long speed. I think Bryce Williams is built and plays exactly like Shannon Brooks did coming out of high school. Again, Shannon Brooks more likely than not going to be contributing a whole lot this year. Now, PJ Fleck did tell, I believe Justin Gard had the tweet, that, you know, they're thinking of some creative ways to use Shannon Brooks potentially right in 2018. Like, okay, that's fine, but you have to look at the long-term picture, because once Rodney Smith is gone, it's going to be a Shannon Brooks bell cow year next year. Now, maybe Nolan Edmonds and Bryce Williams or one of the true freshman running backs that come in the 2019 class play a part in that too. But in that same respect, I don't want Shannon Brooks playing unless he is 100% ready to go. Now, maybe he is come late October, early November. And even still, if you're going to throw him out there, and that's the nice thing about the redshirt rule is you can play him up to 4 games. Maybe he's only a kick returner. Maybe you only have 5. I don't want Shannon Brooks in 2018 getting more than 10 touches in a game. No way. Not a chance. This dude is coming off major knee surgery, and he's going to be counted upon heavily for 2019. So that's my 2 cents about it. I know that PJ made that statement. I'm very hesitant considering he's had an injury history as well. So I think it's going to come down to Nolan Edmonds or Bryce Williams. Two top 25 backs, according to 24/7 Sports, in all of the 2018 recruiting class. Again, Bryce Williams, I think, you know, his ceiling could be, and you hope it is Shannon Brooks. When Shannon Brooks is on, Shannon Brooks is nasty.
Right.
I mean, Bryce Williams is, I think he's built bigger in terms of, I think he's got broader shoulders. I think he's got an inch on him. And he's just, again, I think they're very much in the same mold that they were coming out of high school. And Nolan Edmonds has more shiftiness. He's bigger than Mohamed Ibrahim is. He's faster than Mohamed Ibrahim is. I think Mohamed Ibrahim is still going to be in the mix for Minnesota. I just don't want him to be a feature back. I think if he's your short yardage back, that's fine. But if something were to happen to Rodney Smith, I would absolutely want Nolan Edmonds or Bryce Williams getting the majority of those carries. See what you have in the true freshman before Ibrahim is going to get you those 3-4 yards, where Nolan Edmonds could break those 3 or 4 yards into a bigger game.
Yeah.
And now I did not mention Jonathan Femi-Cole or Dominic London. Two guys on scholarship. I just, again, I run by the whole adage and this came from my father, and it rings so true in college football, is I hear what you say, but I trust what you do. So I hear some different things about, you know, maybe Femi Cole or Dominic Lunde can get some snaps. Well, folks, I hear what people are saying, but I trust what happened in the spring game and what happened in spring practices, where a freshman walk-on in Mike Delich, who's no longer on the team, by the way, he transferred out, got run over them. So if they're passed by a freshman walk-on as scholarship players, that should tell you all about what you need to know about where they're at in the depth chart right now. So, again, you're going to see a steady dose of Rodney Smith in 2018. He's going to get 20-plus carries a game if and when he's healthy. And then you're going to see, I think, Nolan Edmonds, Bryce Williams, and Mohamed Ibrahim behind him. But, again, if I can stress anything from this running back position, I know the plan, at least I've heard from sources, is Rodney Smith is going to be more involved in the passing game than he has been in previous years.
Yeah, let's keep in mind, too, that Shannon Brooks hasn't been the most durable of running backs. He's had some injury history, so let's not forget that. Also, I'd be curious to see, you know, if they want to try and redshirt, you know, a couple of these running backs, if they get creative about who gets to play and who doesn't get to play, you know.
Well, if you want to keep the running back redshirt on,
right?
Well, say Nolan Edmonds plays the first four games,
right?
And Bryce Williams plays the next four games,
right?
And then Mohamed Ibrahim, you can just mix him in intermittently there. Again, he's already got his redshirt year. No need to kind of figure out what games he's going to go into. So again, that's why I think it's so fascinating, is no longer will you have to go in the non-conference. Oh, looks like this true freshman's out there playing. There goes the red shirt.
Right there.
Well, now it's going to be me in the press box. Okay, Bryce Williams played against Miami of Ohio, Iowa, and Maryland. So he's got one more game left. Okay.
There's a real opportunity there, man. Like, some, you know, what has been like, and there goes the red shirt Twitter is now going to be like, there's some Twitter account that's going to have to like keep track of all the players that have played, just so that we can say,
man.
And then it's truly, and there goes the red shirt four. Those are going to be bigger moments instead of game one.
And so I think the position that it's going to be interesting to maybe watch the most is at that pass catching spot, man. I think it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. I mean, you look at it, another position where you have one real clear top dog, right? And that's Ty Johnson. And everything below him is a question mark. There's a lot of high expectations for some of these players, but they're just guys haven't caught balls or haven't gotten a lot of playing time, or they've, you know, battled some injuries and haven't been able to stay on the field consistently, right? So it's a big question mark at that position.
It is the absolute biggest question mark on this entire offense. I know some people are like, well, what about quarterback? You literally just said both Tanner Morgan and Zach Anakstead haven't taken a snap. Yeah, that's right. But I think the biggest question mark is who in the world are they going to be throwing the ball to? Now, I think I have a pretty good grasp on who that's going to be, and we'll get into that here in a second. But I kind of want to just look at 2017 one final time, the black hole that was the pass catching position outside of Tyler Johnson. Tyler Johnson was sensational for this offense as a whole. Again, I know he missed a few games at the end there because of, I believe it was his broken wrist, but he had a 33% target share, which is absurd considering the next highest receiver had 10%. He had 35 catches at wide receiver compared to Philip Howard,
right?
11. And maybe the most glaring stat is he had 677 receiving yards. The next receiver, 132. That's basically five times more receiving yards than the next guy. And I'm going to say this also, Pro Football Focus was not kind to this position. Of the qualifying guys, Minnesota had seven. Five of them had grades below 50. That should surprise absolutely no one. I know when I found that out, I hit up Luke and I was like, hey, does that surprise you? He goes, absolutely not. Matches what we saw when we were watching last year. So, again, Tyler Johnson graded as the seventh best wide receiver in the Big Ten last year. Again, pretty good for a guy that's just going into his third year of wide receiver play. Someone than Tyler Johnson, who was benched behind some other guys in 2016. Not entirely sure what that position coach was doing, but here we are. So, again, you look at what played for Minnesota last year. Mark Williams was the third highest graded guy. Mark Williams is no longer on the team. Drew Himoleski was the fourth highest rated guy. Drew Himoleski has given up football. He's going to focus on the Minnesota baseball program. Eric Carter, no longer with the program. Rashad Still, no longer with the program. And then finally, Demetrius Douglas. We didn't see a lot from him last year because of that lower body injury he sustained. So there's a lot of it's a lot of snaps to go around at this position, Luke. And I think the biggest thing, the last thing I'll touch on from this anemic and terrible wide receiver position in terms of production last year was when Gopher quarterbacks targeted Tyler Johnson last year, the results were pretty good, right? Well, at least for Minnesota passing game-wise. It was a 51% catch rate on 68 targets, 7 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. That's pretty good by Minnesota passing game standards. When Gopher quarterbacks targeted wide receivers not named Tyler Johnson, a 43% catch rate, which is awful, on 71 targets, so essentially the same sample size. And the biggest part of it, 0 passing touchdowns and 9. Yes, you heard me correctly, 9 interceptions. Like, that's so bad. It's so bad, Luke. For me, it's kind of therapeutic now. I've poured the gasoline on this position. I just lit the match. I threw it into the dumpster. It is now on fire. Let's put it out and let's kind of get some hope to this position. And I feel like this position is going to be much better, this pass-catching position.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, you have to imagine they're going to have an influx in talent. It's all going to be very young, right? But you've got an Ottman Bell who's coming off a redshirt injury season. Hopefully he can stay healthy. You've got a Rashad Bateman. Expectations are through the roof for him. You've got others. I still like Philip Howard. He just can't seem to shake the injury bug. It'd be interesting
that
to see if...
took so many... just so many hard hits
right
last year. I felt so bad for him. Like, he was only targeted 25 times, but I feel like 6 or 7 of those he absolutely got crushed,
right?
Whether it was across the middle on a post corner, the safety comes barreling over the top, that man got torn apart last year,
right? And that's the thing. Like, I liked what we saw out of him at times, but at the same time, like, you know, he's got to be able to stay healthy, and also they got to put him in positions to succeed, right? But you know, they've got some young talent. It's just a matter of, again, lacking experience, and that's no excuse for performing. But in the same expectation, or in the same vein, you know, you have to find a way to pull something together, because last year obviously just didn't cut it.
I know some folks got upset about it on social media, which I know you'd be shocked to know that folks get upset about the dumbest things on social media. But PJ Fleck said yesterday at Big Ten Media Days, you know, we're so young. We have a very young team, especially a quarterback and wide receiver and tight end. And folks were like, well, he's already given us excuses. It's not an excuse if it's true. Like, literally, the facts are this, folks. Quarterback, there's nobody who's taking a snap. And I look at what I'm projecting for like a 5 or 6 wide receiver rotation. You have Tyler Johnson, okay? You have Chris Ottman-Bell coming off a redshirt year. He's never taken a collegiate snap. Rashad Bateman, never taken a collegiate snap. Demetrius Douglas, he's got 3 games of eligibility under his belt. And then maybe Philip Howard as well. He's got a few games of experience as well. You're talking about 2 guys in Ottman-Bell and Bateman who have never taken a snap, and Demetrius Douglas, who's played in 3 games. I think those 3, and you pair them with Tyler Johnson, that's what you're going to see for a wide receiver rotation. So you have one guy who's got essentially 1 season of 12 games under his belt in Tyler Johnson. And again, I think Philip Howard's going to probably be the 5th wide receiver in this rotation, because Ottman Bell and Bateman provide 2 things that Minnesota hasn't had at this position. At least I've seen it in Ottman Bell during practice. Now, we didn't see it in the spring game just as much, as I think that young man was a little bit nervous, wasn't exactly efficient with his targets. But what Ottman Bell can provide is he can win 50-50 balls more than 50% of the time. We haven't even had a wide receiver do that since essentially Dejon McKnight, who can win it over 30% of the time. Mm-hmm. And Chris isn't a big body. I mean, he's 6'1", but the way he's able to position himself, and if the ball is anywhere near him, he knows how to go up and get it. And then you also have Rashad Bateman, who can stretch the field. Again, someone that can essentially, you'd hope, and I've seen Chris do this in practice, if Ottman Bell and Bateman are able to, number one, win 50-50 balls about 50% of the time, it's already an upgrade about what Minnesota's had in the last 5-10 years. And then they also, you hope, can beat press coverage at the line of scrimmage. Because I know I see it on Gopher Illustrated, I see it on social media, and I talk about it with different people in the media as well. Minnesota wasn't able to beat press coverage last year, so what happened? What happened was, wide receivers not named Tyler Johnson were just put on islands. Mm-hmm. Essentially, it was press man at the line of scrimmage. The opposing cornerbacks were like, you're not going to beat us because you can't get separation off the line. And when you do, I'm not going to let you get separation out of your breaks. Well, if Tyler Johnson is just going to get double teamed and then you have all receivers elsewhere not getting open, well, that's not going to help your quarterback anywhere. So if Bateman and Ottman Bell can stretch the field vertically, if they can get off the line of scrimmage and beat press coverage just occasionally, hell, even 50% of the time, I mean, we're talking about a much improved offense because that opens things up in the short to intermediate game for Tyler Johnson, Demetrius Douglas, Phillip Howard. If the safeties and the corners have to really respect the deep game of getting burnt over the top, again, you can't have 7-8 man boxes, because if you're going to have 7-8 man boxes, you're playing essentially probably cover one, cover zero elsewhere. And if, again, it's just going to help the entire offense as a whole. So I have much higher expectations for this passing game because of Ottman Bell, because of Demetrius Douglas, because of Rashad Bateman. And even in that same breath, I should include Seth Green and Brevin Spanford.
Right.
I mean, if we want to kind of look at tight ends, I mean, there's going to be two different versions of tight ends that you're going to see in this offense. You're going to see the Co-Keefs. You're going to see the Jake Paulsons, the Colton Beebes, who are essentially going to be your Nate Wozniaks from last year. And I mean that as such an extreme compliment, considering Nate Wozniak graded out as the best run blocking tight end in all of college football last year, according to Pro Football Focus. Like, Co-Keefe actually graded out much above average in the limited snaps that we saw from him run blocking last year. I think Co-Keefe is going to be relied upon heavily as a redshirt sophomore. Someone is going to be a huge part of Minnesota's run game success, along with, I think, Jake Paulson as a redshirt. And we'll see if Colton Beebe is healthy. I mean, there may be not another player on the roster I feel worse for that has derailed a career by injuries than Colton Beebe. Because when Colton Beebe was healthy in his redshirt year, I mean, he was so dynamic as a fullback. He was so versatile, and unfortunately for him, because of a knee injury, it's basically derailed his career. And we'll see how much Minnesota can get out of him this fall. But so you'll have those three run blocking, and again, Keith will likely be able to do some things in the passing game. But Seth Green and Brevin Spanford, I think, are the X factors. Seth Green especially, because Seth Green, again, many folks listening to this podcast know the story. You know, the East Ridge infamy, goes down to Texas, splits time at quarterback at Allen. Oregon takes him as a quarterback commitment, then tells him in November, hey, we'll still take you as a commit, but we want you as a tight end. Seth says no. Oregon says bye. He ends up, Tracy Claes takes him as a quarterback at Minnesota. It didn't work out for Seth as a quarterback at Minnesota, and he's accepted his role now as a pass catcher. I don't want Seth Green being a run blocker. That's not where Seth Green's going to win. That's not where Seth Green is going to make your offense better. Where Seth Green's going to make your offense better is as a pass catcher. I don't want to put a label on him. I don't want to tell you he's a tight end. I don't want to tell you he's a wide receiver. He's probably both. He's just a pass catcher. The man's 6'5", 240 pounds. And when we saw him start to get comfortable towards the end of spring ball, you saw him do things that no other receiver on the roster can do because of his size and because of his athleticism and because of his speed. I think you're going to see Kirk Ciarrocchi use both Brevin Spanford and Seth Green in a bunch of different ways because, again, Kirk Ciarrocchi isn't stupid. Kirk Ciarrocchi knows if he wants to keep his job and if he wants his offense to be looking good, keep the product in the field, to keep Minnesota winning games, he's got to figure out a way to use Seth Green and Brevin Spanford. I mean, I've heard reports from Minnesota high school coaches that Brevin Spanford, you know, I've had, again, a couple of coaches that played in the St. Cloud Tech Conference tell me he has the best pair of hands they've ever seen. I mean, some of these guys have been coaching 15, 20 years. Now, again, your response to me, well, what's the quality of product they've seen up there? Again, the man is 6'7", folks, and what he's able to do with that size and with his athleticism, his footwork, and going up to win those 50-50 balls, he had offers for basketball as a Division I player. Now, I know the last guy who did it, Rashad Still, didn't work out great for him to go up and get that rebound in terms of a 50-50, but again, I've seen Brevin Spanford do it at some different camps. Again, I think Seth Green is going to be featured much more than Brevin Spanford was, but I don't think Brevin Spanford or Rashad Bateman redshirt. I just think that their skill sets are so unique to what Minnesota has at different positions along their pass catching core, that's where you're going to see Minnesota kind of mix in. So again, even in those two, again, PJ Fleck says we're young. People say that's excuses. Seth Green isn't exactly young. I believe he's a redshirt sophomore. He's never played tight end in his life. So of course, I mean, he's young. He's green. He doesn't know what he's doing there. And then Brevin Spann Ford still trying to figure out how to transition from St. Cloud High School football to Big Ten football is also going to be something different there. So you look at your pass catching core of Tyler Johnson. He's got one full season under his belt. Demetrius Douglas has 3-4 games. You look at Rashad Bateman, never played in a game. Chris Ottman Bell, never played in a game. Seth Green, never played in a game as a tight end and or a pass catcher, along with Brevin Spann Ford. There's going to be some lumps taken, especially as this offense, hopefully, as you continue to build throughout the season and these guys gain confidence. You know, as Chris Ottman Bell going against New Mexico State, you want him better. You know, you want that game against Maryland to be better than it was against Miami of Ohio. As these guys gain confidence, as they gain, again, as these guys continue to believe that they can play in the Big Ten, I think this offense as a whole will benefit from it.
Yeah, confidence is an amazing thing, right?
Ain't it, though?
If you have confidence, you seem to be able to do some amazing things. And when you don't, it never ceases to amaze you how poorly you're doing.
whether on the football field or in real life.
Right, exactly.
It's, Luke, you and I as men who have better halves, I mean, we still have single friends. And you'll go, I mean, this is probably a terrible analogy, but like you'll go out to a restaurant or a bar and you'll see, you know, this guy who maybe isn't the best looking of guys going up to this, these good looking women, and he's able to make them laugh. He's got the confidence that he's got game, even if it's not even good game. Just to have the confidence that you have game,
right?
I think it just resonates well with people. Maybe it's the opposite sex, whatever it may be. Again, confidence will take you a long way in life. So, again, as these pass catchers gain confidence, things will get better.
Yeah.
As quarterbacks gain confidence, I think this offense will be better. The question mark is going to remain is how quickly will they gain confidence? Because say things don't go well in the non-conference, Minnesota slips up against, say, a Fresno State. How does that impact them? Because they still have, I think, 6 or 7 winnable games in the Big Ten. Again, there's not a whole lot of teams outside of Wisconsin, Ohio State, that I think Minnesota just doesn't have a chance against. So, again, this offense just needs to gain confidence. It needs to gain experience. And I think those two things go hand in hand. As the experience goes up, the confidence goes up, and the offense, hopefully, that arrow continues to go up.
Yeah, let's not kid ourselves, too. Like, I don't think Fleck has a terrible mentality about, you know, protecting the ball. Obviously, you don't want to turn the ball over, but also you don't want to be super one-dimensional, right? You have to be able to keep defenses and defensive coordinators on their toes. Sometimes in football, surprise or diversity lends itself to success, right? And I think that we have seen year after year after year, whether that was last year with PJ Fleck's first season or if, as he affectionately calls year zero, we saw more of the same that we saw from Jerry Kill, where we were fairly one dimensional. I imagine that they want to get closer to balance. I recognize that, you know, true football balance is probably running the ball, you know, 55% of the time and throwing the ball 45% of the time. But if there is a way that they can find some balance here, and I like what they've said, that they're going to try and fit the scheme to the players, right? I think that hopefully they can find some success and build into some confidence going into Big Ten play.
And I think, again, it's like the biggest thing is you look at this offense from last season, 68% run, 32% pass. Kirk Shiroka doesn't want to be there. And again, I hear what you say, but I trust what you do. He says that he doesn't want to be there, but does he actually? Well, go look at his Western Michigan offenses. He doesn't want to be there. He wants to be 50-50 run to pass. He wants to be 55 run to pass. He wants to be much, much higher than 42% passing. He didn't have a quarterback that could get the ball there, and then he didn't have a passing game weapon outside of Tyler Johnson last season that could consistently, one, get open, two, again, get off the line, get open, catch the ball. And then if he did catch the ball, he couldn't make a play with it outside of Tyler. Well, now you have, again, you have more pass catching options, whether it's Rodney Smith out of the backfield that the staff is planning on getting the ball a little bit more. You have Chris Ottman Bell to complement Tyler Johnson, Rashad Bateman, Demetrius Douglas, Seth Green, Brevin Spann Ford. I mean, that's 4 or 5 names right there that I think can help you up that passing game percentage, get it back into the 40s, and then get it much closer to 50-50 here in a year or two. So, again, as the I think the biggest thing that you should take away from this podcast as you continue to get excited about Gopher football is we're just 35, 36 days away, Luke.
Sure, something like
that. Is that this offense is going to be young. We've laid out why and how it's going to be young. But as this offense and these young players continue to gain confidence, the arrow goes up because their confidence goes up and then their ability to make plays and what they knew that they could do in high school. If they believe they can do that and they're actually doing that in Division I football, you're going to be much happier in your seats at TCF Bank Stadium.
Yeah, it should be an interesting development to watch this team, you know, grow up probably this year and in the next couple of years to come. And we'll hopefully be around to document it the whole way. So for the foreseeable future for the podcast, we will be doing a defensive breakdown, I would imagine, here pretty soon.
Yeah, so the plan is we're weekly now, folks. No longer do you have to go into the sports abyss. Football is almost here. We're almost late July. We're going to do defense next week, and then the following week, that first, that week of August 5th, which, by the way, is a great day. Hint, it may be or may not be my birthday. You're looking at getting me something.
Oh, brilliant.
That first week of August, after we do the defensive breakdown next week, I should by then have able to see a couple of fall camp practices. We'll get my impressions there. And then, guys, we're almost football's time. So, again, we'll start to do our bold predictions. And then it's before you know it, we're previewing the New Mexico State Aggies as they approach TCF Bank Stadium, I believe, on August 30th. So it's going to be a weekly podcast from here on out, boys.
Yeah, we'll have to hope that there's no Aggie vision on that first game for those people that can remember back to those days.
God, there's no more Aggie vision. That was all I remember is the car sale commercials. If you remember that, hit Luke and I up on Twitter because that was such a it was so cringy. Again, how does a Division I program and how does Minnesota not get a BTN crew with actual legitimate cameras and not streaming in 420p? off like an iPhone 4. How does that, again, that's here nor there, that's in the past.
Yeah.
Be on BTN, I'm sure.
All right. Well, we appreciate everybody listening. If you want to, we'd appreciate it if you would subscribe for the season. Also rate and leave comments about the podcast. That helps other people find it. For myself, for Ryan, we appreciate you listening and go Gophers.